Good morning, Your Honors. Allison Young for Appellant Susan Maxwell. May it please the Court. This is a Social Security case, which, as you know, involves a five-step process to determine whether a person is or is not disabled. And at the first four steps, the claimant has the burden to show that they are not currently working, that they have medical limitations that affect their ability to work, and that they're unable to return to their past work. Once that burden is met, the burden shifts to the commissioner to show that that person can make an adjustment to other work that exists in the national economy. For claimants who are of advanced age, which is defined as 55 or over, there's what amounts to a rebuttable presumption of disability. If the claimant has met those first four steps, they are disabled unless they can make an adjustment to.
So let me ask, does this case all focus on step five?
This case is all focused
on step five. This is a step five case, correct?
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. At the time she filed her application, was she, you know, what was her age?
I'm not sure exactly. I know she was 55 at all material times for the case. So she's been over 55.
Was she 55 at the...
She was 55
when she filed her application.
Yes.
I thought she was younger than 55.
I'm going to have to check the pleadings on that. My recollection is that she was over 55 at all material times.
Well, do you know when she was born?
Off the top of my head, no, Your Honor.
1957.
Okay.
So when did she file her application?
Would have been about 2016.
Well, look, let me ask you this. At some point, she turned 55 before the decision became final in front of the ALJ.
Yes, she turned 55 in 2012.
Okay. So tell me, explain to me what was the significance of turning 55?
Well, under the medical vocational rules, if you're 55 years or over, you're limited to light work, you can't do your past work, then the commissioner, which is to say the ALJ, has to show that you have skills that you've acquired from your past work that you can transfer to a significant range of other work.
Readily transferable.
Right. Thank you. Readily transferable to a significant range of other work. And so that...
Is there any meaning to the term readily? What does that mean?
I think there is some meaning there. It's not what really this case is about.
Okay.
But I think that goes to the ALJ's burden to show what the skills are so that the claimant or reviewing court can readily understand how those skills would be transferable.
To a significant range of work?
Right.
And I think the ALJ said there were two occupations?
That's right.
Correct?
And one of the issues that we're raising here is that in a previous decision, Lounsbury v. Barnhart, mm-hmm. This court had decided, or held, I should say, that a single occupation, regardless of the number of jobs in that occupation, does not constitute a range of work.
Mm-hmm.
And building on that, we're curious about the meaning of the word significant here, because we'll concede that two jobs or two occupations is a range, but the presence of the word significant directly implies that there's such a thing as an insignificant range of work. And if two is the minimum threshold for a range, then if there's any such thing as an insignificant range, it would seem that two would be it.
What cases support your argument?
There is really no case on point either way.
Mm-hmm.
This is all just in the language of Lounsbury, really.
Mm-hmm.
And Lounsbury focused more on the word range, but also dealt with the fact that significant is in the statute modifies that concept of a range.
What, you want us to hold that two occupations is not a significant range?
Exactly. Well, that's one of the two issues that we're here
with
for.
Would three be a significant range, in your view?
I'm not sure.
Would four?
I don't think that case is before us. I think...
Would four be a significant range?
I'm not sure where the line is, Your Honor.
That's the problem. We have to draw a line somewhere.
I don't think we have to draw a line today to say that two is below the line. Similarly, in Gutierrez, which was about the number of jobs, not the number of occupations, the court concluded that 25,000, although a close call, was a significant number of jobs. They did not draw a line and say this many is significant and above that is fine and below that is not fine. The court declined to draw that line because it's a fact-by-fact, it's a case-by-case determination.
Well, it's not case-by-case if we draw a line. If we draw a line at two, then all of the ones that are two are out if we draw the line at three. So it's not fact. Once we draw the line, it's not case-by-case anymore.
Right. That's fair. I do note that the at least at three occupations, there would be more than just the minimum range. I can say candidly, I wouldn't have brought the case at that point. Mm-hmm. I do note that for a claimant who's over age 55, the range of unskilled work, which is 1,600 occupations, is considered not sufficient to meet the commissioner's burden. So 1,600 different occupations is not significant. I don't know that two versus one makes that much of a difference.
You said that there were two. You said this was one of two issues that you were...
Right. The other issue is that in order to show that this person who's age 55 or over is not disabled, the ALJ has to identify some skills that they acquired from the past work, and they have to identify a range of work that they can take those skills and go do. And here, the skills were defined as merchandising sales. That's the sum total of the definition. Our position is that that is not sufficient under the statute.
What case are you relying upon to support your argument that that lacks specificity?
Well, there's no case in the Ninth Circuit that's on point. We invited the court to look at the Second Circuit approach, which is Dragert, and that in Dragert, the court held that the ALJ had identified abilities of the claimant, but an ability doesn't rise to the level of a skill until it's linked to particular job tasks. And that's based on the Social Security ruling 82-41 that said that a skill is practical and familiar knowledge of the principles and processes of an art, science, or trade, combined with the ability to apply them in practice in a proper and approved manner. So it's ability on the one hand and work tasks on the other, and those two things linked. I just don't think merchandising sales brings that together. I would think that it should be something in each hand.
Is that the approach the Ninth Circuit has taken in terms of its precedent regarding transferable skills?
The Ninth Circuit has not addressed this question previously.
But it has discussed transferable skills, correct?
Yes, but as far as what burden the ALJ has to meet to identify the skills, we're in uncharted waters, Your Honor.
Remind me, what's the basis of your client's disability?
She had a traumatic brain injury, and so that affected her ability to focus and to deal with customers. There were also some physical issues. She was ultimately found limited to light work. There were some foot issues. She was determined that she would not be able to drive, so that ruled out a lot of those sales jobs because she couldn't do things in the field.
I'm thinking she must have been, she claimed disability beginning in December of 2011.
All right, so then to your point, she was not quite
55 at the alleged onset date. So she was 54 at the time.
Okay, so there is a little bit of a window where she wasn't 55 yet. I apologize for that.
And for that, under your argument, for that period of time, she wouldn't be eligible for benefits.
I think that's entirely
given your accurate argument that you're making.
There do appear to be light jobs that she could perform during that limited period, so...
So what is the relief you're asking for?
Well, the relief we're asking for is either remand for the ALJ to make particular findings as to what skills she has and how they would transfer, or in the alternative, should the court agree that two occupations is not a significant range, it would be a remand for immediate calculation and payment of benefits from age 55 forward.
Okay. All right. Do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Please the court, counsel, Lars Nelson on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. This court should affirm the decision of the ALJ in this matter because it is supported by substantial evidence. And that finding would be consistent with the Supreme Court's recent decision in Bistick v. Berryhill. And here there was unchallenged vocational testimony that the claimant can perform two jobs that exist in significant numbers in the national economy in light of her transferable skills. At page 73 of the supplemental excerpt of records, the vocational expert, the ALJ asked the vocational expert, were there jobs that she could specifically do with the specific transferable skills? And at 74, the vocational expert said that the skill of merchandising sales was directly transferable.
Let me ask you this. His argument is all about when she turns 55. Is your argument saying that, I mean, I don't quite fit your argument into what counsel just argued?
Well, there's two issues, Your Honor. There's the general finding of, are there a significant number of jobs in the national economy that the claimant can do in light of her transferable skills? That's regardless of
whether she's 50, over 55 or not?
That's correct. Under the regulations, 20 CFR 404-1568-D, there is no special analysis articulated for the claimants in light of her light limitations and her age. Had she been restricted to sedentary work, there would be slightly different analysis, but there isn't here. The question that counsel raises goes to the court's decision in Lounsbury.
Yes.
And Lounsbury was very narrowly tailored to just dealing with the question of, was one occupation, as identified by a vocational expert in response to interrogatories, a significant number under grid rule 202.00C.
A significant range.
Yes, and Lounsbury held that it was not. But Lounsbury did not address how this court should perform the analysis of a significant range. And to that, I would point to the court's first Gutierrez decision, where the court declined to extend any bright line rules to a significant number of jobs. And I would also point this court to the Supreme Court's decision in BSTEC, where the court rejected a request for a categorical rule as applied to vocational testimony in that case. Here, this court does not need to create a bright line rule. As the second court's decision in Gutierrez, a separate decision than the more recent of the two, this court explained that the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, each title represents numerous occupations. That issue was not considered in Lounsbury. And here, the positions of burial needs and commercial equipment salesperson anticipate people who are performing different occupations. Some might just be selling coffins. Some might just be selling chairs and desks for office, whereas somebody else is doing a different thing. The number of occupations anticipated is different from just the number of job numbers. And the commissioner would say that this court has to look at the totality of the claimant's past relevant work, the specific occupations identified, whether the Dictionary of Occupational Titles is instructive on that point, and then also the job numbers. And
well,
arriving
couldn't the same thing have been argued in Lounsbury, that even though there was only one range, there were a number of different specific jobs that could be included within that range? Why isn't that argument non-persuasive? Because it was the same circumstance in Lounsbury.
Well, Lounsbury does not tell us whether the court was considering the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. And I think Lounsbury did an excellent job of not taking this court's case law and binding future courts too far. In Lounsbury, there was only one occupation, and they were able to deal with the very simple issue of one occupation is not a range.
All right, why can't, though, now we've got, the vocational expert says there are just two occupations and no more. So why now, maybe we have to up the notch from one to two and say that's not a significant range? I mean, that's what counsel for the petitioner is arguing.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, that would be within the realm of possible holdings. The commissioner would argue that this court's precedent has rejected bright-line rules, and that's consistent with the Supreme Court's decision in
Well, no. No, wait. Now, you're overstating. Look, we don't have to make a bright-line rule that it takes three or four or five or six. We're in a case where there are two. I guess we have to draw some line. Either say we're not going to draw any line or say two's a minimum. Why do you say we can't do that?
Well, I think that this court would, that reduces the analysis of a significant range strictly to a matter of arithmetic. And
well,
so
but,
we
but
can,
a significant range, the words have to be given some meaning, don't they? What is this significant range has to mean more than one, doesn't it?
Well, with a significant number of jobs, this court has declined to create a bright line rule. And then the commissioner's position would be that the significant range is case specific. And to the court's question about Lounsbury, that argument could have been made in Lounsbury that if, you know, the job identified there encompasses multiple occupations, but that's just simply not in the decision for this court to be guided by in that case. The commissioner would also go to this court's decision in Barnes, where the ultimate decision finding here of the ALJ was that there were two jobs that existed in significant numbers in the national economy. That's in light of the claimant's entire residual functional capacity assessment. However, we're talking about a grid rule which only considers her exertional range. So residual functional capacity increases the universe of jobs. In Barnes, this court held that we cannot use the grids to constrain the subsequent analysis. In Barnes, the grid rules directed a finding of not disabled based on the claimant having unskilled work available. The ALJ there, however, relied on semi-skilled jobs. And this court said, we don't take the grids to inform that subsequent step. So if there was a question how many jobs she could perform for application of those grid rules, that we are not looking at the whole residual functional capacity, we're just looking at her exertional range. And if there was truly a question about that in this case, then it could be remanded to the commissioner for further development of the record on that point. Because again, there was no questioning or argument about this at the before the agency or to the appeals council.
Counsel, what's your response to opposing counsel's argument regarding the lack of specificity in the transferable skills determination?
My position was that this court decided that issue in Ossenbrock, where the claimant defines the duties and tasks performed in the past relevant work, and we can look to the vocational expert to translate those into an articulable transferable skill.
And what did the vocational expert say here on that very point?
The vocational expert spoke in great detail.
Merchandising sales.
And to that, we need to only look to page 310 in the supplemental excerpt of record, where the claimant described her automotive sales skills as handling customer service in a stressful sales environment, engaging in sales negotiation, product demonstration, finalizing sales and delivery, lead follow-up via emails and calls, and checking inventory.
And now she's 55.
Yes, and I think...
So what does it mean when it says readily transferable?
Well, in this case...
I mean, you know, as you get older, things get a little bit harder, right?
In this case, we don't need to wrestle with that question because...
Why not?
Because the ALJ asked on 73, are there skills that are specifically transferable? Mm-hmm. And then the vocational expert on the bottom of 74 said... the skill of merchandising sales is directly transferable. Mm-hmm. So there's no, on this record, there's no question mm-hmm. that the skills are readily transferable, even though the ALJ or the vocational expert did not use those magic
words. Is there a difference between directly and readily?
I would say readily directly is more narrowly tailored than readily. Mm-hmm. And unless the court has any other questions, I would ask this court to affirm. And I would remind the court that the claimant was working using her sales skills for Angie's List throughout the relevant period. So this is not an abstraction. In this case, we know she is can continue to use her transferable skills.
Okay.
First of all, Your Honors, to address counsel's last point, there are unskilled sales jobs in the world, and because of that, we know that sales in and of itself is not a skill by definition. Anything you can do as part of an unskilled job is not a skill because skills are only acquired from skilled or semi-skilled work. And that really goes to the heart of the problem here. Merchandising sales, what does that mean? There was argument in the pleadings over whether we could look to the dictionary definition. But if we can't look to the dictionary definition, what else do we have? The ALJ doesn't tell us what merchandising skills, sales, means. The vocational expert didn't tell us what merchandising sales means. Counsel would have us look to the claimant's particular itemization of what she did, but that doesn't tell us which of those rises to the level of a skill. And it's the ALJ's burden to identify those skills with sufficient specificity that the claimant or this reviewing court can determine that they have clearly met the burden. Also, as to the number of jobs, again, with Lounsbury, the number of jobs was not the issue. It was the number of occupations. And here again, there are two occupations. The number of jobs is not relevant. If it has any relevance, I would note that one of those two jobs has only 3,500 positions in the national economy.
So the result is going to turn on our interpretation of Lounsbury and whether it bumps up from one occupation to two as a minimum?
For that issue, yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted.